I'm speaking with Stephen Kuntz with Colorado State University. And first of all, tell me a little bit about what you do.
I'm a faculty in the Ag and Resource Economics Department. I do research on the livestock markets, and I also do some teaching and extension work.
Well, we're at a forum to talk about this proposed GPSA rule, and I think people are trying to better understand it. And so from your perspective as an economist, having looked at it, what are some of the things that strike you first about it, concerns or otherwise?
I was very interested in the rule at first because the PNS Act itself has some real vague language in it. And one of the things that the Farm Bill instructed GPSA to do was to clarify some of the terminology in that act, some of the terminology that we wind up arguing over in court. And so they've attempted to do that in this rule by fleshing out some of that aspects of the act.
All right, so understanding that they had something they needed to accomplish, it seems like there are a lot of concerns from a variety of groups involved in the livestock industry. What would some of those be then?
My interpretation of the Farm Bill legislation was that they were given some pretty specific instructions, and it was related a lot to production contracts, in particular in the poultry industry and pork industry. And if you look at this rule in its whole, it tackles some of that, but it also lumps beef and a lot of other marketing arrangements in with the rule and sort of under the umbrella of let's take a look at production contracts and figure them out.
So how does that present a concern? I mean, what is it that would be the impact of that on especially the cattle industry?
I was real disappointed to see the cattle industry just kind of lumped in with everybody else. You know, there are aspects. Number one, the cattle industry is very different from the other livestock industries. And the pork industry is not exactly like the chicken industry. They have some production contracts, but they do a lot of other things as well. So these industries are substantially different, and just to have them all treated as one was very bothersome for me. Another thing, the use of alternative marketing arrangements or contracting in the cattle industry, if you look at it, it's primarily formula contracts. We've got a lot of good research on how those things are actually beneficial to cattle markets, beneficial to consumers, and they're treated in a very heavy-handed way in this new rule. The rule basically says that if there's any sort of differential pricing for certain non-cash markets, in these markets for formula cattle or forward contracts, that if there's any sort of differential treatment in pricing, that it has to be documented and justified. And that opens the packing industry to the potential of having to explain every last premium and discount they pay to producers. That's going to be costly, and if producers don't like it, there's the potential for legal action. There's the potential for a PNS Act violation or that whole justice type arrangement that they go through to look at these things, to enforce the PNS Act. So I think this opens up a lot of, number one, it's some cost for packers. Number two, it opens them up to risk they don't face now. And I think anytime you tack on costs and risks to the packing industry, that's going to get passed right back down to fed cattle and feeder cattle and eventually to calves.
And maybe even taking it further eventually to the consumer, too.
Well, certainly. If you drive costs into the beef marketing system, two people suffer primarily. Number one, it's the cow-calf person. It's the person all the way downstream that's providing the start of the product, and then it's the consumer. It's the final buyer. So if you drive cost into the system, you're going to have less beef, and that consumer will eventually have to cover those higher costs through retail beef prices.
So let me see if I understand this then. If we've had packers who have developed agreements, contracts, for a type of product that the consumer has said they want, and these are ideally going to provide some extra incentives or premiums or profit for that matter, with increasing their costs to do this kind of stuff, it might potentially impact their desire or even ability to enter into these type of contracts then, from a financial standpoint?
Very much so. I think the if you read the rule, it treats any sort of differential pricing as preferential pricing, as that you know, packers are paying somebody else more for some reason other than economics-based reasons. So what the rule is really saying is you have to justify any sort of differences in prices. You have to be prepared as a packer to keep records, justify those differences, and then be able to explain them in a P&S action. As opposed to right now, all of these preferential, not necessarily preferential, but all these price differences have to be justified by the market. There has to be some sort of, for example, there's premiums that show up for CAB. There's premiums that show up for source and age verified. There's premiums that show up for just about anything that a different group of retailers might want to market to the consumers they sell to. Those premiums right now are justified in the marketplace. And what this rule says is there, if there's some disagreement about how, who has access to those premiums or how that system operates, that the P&S, that under the P&S Act, we should be able to take a look at them and evaluate them. I really fall down on thinking this needs to be a market-driven thing and not necessarily a government-driven thing.
So for the people who might look at it on the surface and say, this looks and sounds good, and it's got to benefit the small cow-calf producer, for example. What do you tell them in terms of what the maybe the potential real impacts could be then?
I've got a colleague from Oklahoma State University that has a great response to that. It's the, you know, if you look closely at the rule, it's the simple, easy to understand wrong answer. It really lumps a lot of things under an umbrella that may or may not be appropriate. This is always pitched as big versus little, and I don't think it's big versus little. It's what it's doing is targeting the good producer who's innovative, who's trying to do something different. Now, whatever they do has to become public knowledge. The P&S would want to post that contract so that anybody can look at it and see what that producer's doing. That really, you know, that really stomps pretty hard on creativity and innovation. And it says that any sort of differences in prices aren't justified, that no matter how hard cow-calf people work or feedlots work to do something different and have a better product, that may not be recognized. We're going to call that trouble and take a look at it very closely.
So would it be fair to kind of characterize this in a way as potentially allowing, ultimately, government to control the market? Or is that taking it too far?
I'm sure that's taking it too far. You know, you, in this business, you always hear, and I really sympathize with you journalists, that you catch one end and then you catch the other end and you try to make sense of what's going on in the middle. I think, you know, the P&S Act has, you know, almost a 100-year legal history. It has an extensive legislative history. And it was designed for good reasons, and it has been implemented reasonably in the past. Not all the time in every last case, but there's a reason why we have the P&S Act. And I don't think that this is one reason why we have it. It looks to me like it's trying to lower the bar in terms of what the legal system then wants to take a look at and evaluate. You know, I'm all for, you know, as an economist, markets have to work within legal systems. You cannot run a totally deregulated market. You wind up with all kinds of problems if you do that. We're well aware of that from our financial system. But at the same time, you have to have really well-known and safe places to trade in markets to make them work.
Well, I think that will help further greater understanding of what the potential impacts of this rule are, and this forum that we are attending is meant to help accomplish that. So I really appreciate you taking some time to talk with me here. That's Steve Kuntz with Colorado State University. I'm Chuck Zimmerman reporting.